Bimba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Download it and subscribe today. Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmed and Dwight on Eagle FM. As always, we're here until the hour of 6. And Berlin, you know, the transitioning from one show to another, I know like they have like what? Like more than 9, 11, 12, 1, 2, 3, 4. They have like, 5 hours and 30 minutes apart, but I really have like every time I say welcome to this show, and I just have to make sure that I don't mix stuff up. Yeah, I don't mix stuff up, you know, even though it's somewhat tricky in terms of as we get along, as we go along. But, well, this is not Mind the Gap, it's Home Run. And we're here until the hour of 6, your drive time show, Helmed and Dwight on Eagle FM. And as always, we have yet another exciting topic for you. Now, this one is more, is one of those really broad ones in comparison.
There is no broadness here.
Because we are basically talking about preserving culture.
Not just that. That's why I'm actually giving you the counter. Okay, let's do bad cop, good cop.
Okay.
You present the preservation, meaning very broad.
It's very broad.
And I can give you the opposite view, bad cop, of why it does not look,
It doesn't look broad. Okay.
Yeah. I think. And it's based upon where they had this particular summit.
In South Korea?
Yeah. It's based upon South Korea, which you could have also done in Hollywood, for example, in the US.
I've come to learn that the one for last year was held in Stockholm, Sweden. And every time that I hear someone saying basically, you know, the words of the two words, preservation of culture, you know, cultural preservation, you know, because preservation of culture, there'll be three. Cultural preservation, it's for me, I think it's one of those things that brings up a lot of historical references, because all throughout history, cultures have changed.
Yes.
Yeah, cultures have changed. There are things that was done by our ancestors that we don't do today. That's because, well, you know, anyone that you'll ask, they'll just tell you that times have changed. I will give you an example in my culture, a lot of Africans can relate, because you know, this is something that have been that have been practiced in one way or another in a lot of different cultures.
Yeah.
You know, a rite of passage, for example. You know, as a man, as a boy transitions into a man, or a woman, or a girl transitions into womanhood. Mm. There were a series of of cultural activities while when the said individual, a boy or a girl, transitioning into manhood or womanhood, there were a series of cultural rituals that were performed as to sort of like commemorate or celebrate that that transition.
Yeah.
But barely, these things are barely practiced anymore, because more often you have a lot of kids that are just at the hostel at the time. So to carry out this transition, you will have to pull them out of school for that period, for a period of 1 or 2 weeks, depending on how the length of that practice in your culture.
Mm.
And what do you think is going on at school at the time? The teacher is like, okay, fine.
The school is not waiting for you.
Yeah, we're not going to wait for you. So now I understand why we just like, you know what, some of these things we have to put a pause, because, it's just not fitting into modern day, into modern day way of doing things.
I'm actually glad you started from that point, Helmut.
Yeah.
Because, you illustrated the rite of passage scenario. Is there a specific age range where that exercise takes place?
I don't think there's a specific age range, especially obviously different cultures will be looking for different markers on how they know that. Okay, now maybe I think that's one thing that a lot of cultures have in common.
Mm.
When it comes to men or to boys, you're basically at a certain age you are given a series of activities to to execute, and obviously it's more like playing video games. The more you accomplish, the more they give you.
You remember, video games is also a cultural product.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, so these activities are obviously going to be to be complicated. The next one is going to be more difficult than the previous.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's mostly in men, but in women, it's mostly in most cases has to do with the first menstrual cycle.
Yeah.
And when now from there,
which
that's
is
when
13, 12 years. Old.
Yeah, somewhere that age.
Yeah.
That's when they put them through a series of activities of how, now you know why some of these things have changed. You know how to, this how to cook for your husband, and
it was a transference of home economics from school
exactly
to a more household level.
Community
level.
Yeah, this is how to treat. This is how to do this. This is how to do this. If you are, now when your kids are having a cough, for example, these are the plants.
I didn't catch on there. But when you said sorry, Ohangwena, I was like, yay. You must leave Ohangwena alone now.
Look, I love that.
That region will show up here alone. Beat us up, even me, collateral damage, just because of your apologies on a regular basis.
I
will really be collateral damage.
No, when it comes to Nkorenkuru, that will be me being collateral because of you.
I had to go for a small target. I had to find a way of beating down on someone small,
Someone small.
I mean, that's what the US and Britain did to Iraq,
Pick someone here.
We need to show our might. The smallest guy in the room. Let's pick the smallest guy up.
Yeah, we think Iraq has nuclear weapons.
Guys, as a
what
belief,
I do.
Guys, as a belief, I didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. I'm just minding myself.
And North Korea is like, cool, but I have nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
And it's like, well.
And no one has come to me.
Yeah, well.
I've developed dirty bombs.
I think that's the problem. You have nuclear weapons, so we're not going to touch you. Yeah. So, a rite of passage for me, I don't think there's a strict age limit. But the series of activities that one have to accomplish in order to go through that transition.
Yeah.
In most cultures, most of which involved circumcision in terms of men, and painful enough in some cultures, it also involved women. Now that was, I think, a pain in the in the neck for the United Nations,
not
especially
just, not just the UN, for the various African governments, because they realized that it was damaging the personal health. Of so many women and so many young boys.
Yeah.
Well, let me rather say teenage boys, because women, in some cases, the parents would take them to a doctor, and other women from certain lower economic demographics did not have that lucky. They went to someone's auntie or great auntie who did that 50 years ago, and the person has got failing eyesight, and the person has to aim for situations. Yes, hence the reason I'm using the word situations. And yeah, but you're actually talking about initiation processes, right?
Initiation ceremonies.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. All these, for the most part, made more like a rite of passage. And for some cultures in eastern part of Africa, you'll have to jump over a cow. And don't ask also I think it's in eastern part of Africa, you were given whips to basically whip the heck out of each other, and the one who cries loses. I think I'll die a virgin in that culture.
You will find me acting serious face. That's the quickest we will have World War III in the village. Never.
Look,
I will definitely do a Romeo and Juliet. I'll go get my brothers. We will sort this out.
Look, man, a rite of passage is across cultures. Weird. Bungee jumping was a rite of passage. So all these things basically, goes to show, everyone can look into their culture, right? And they will tell you that, at some point, this was practiced in my culture.
Yeah.
But we don't do it anymore.
Until Christianity showed up.
Oh boy.
But here's, it's a good thing we're starting on this particular point, Helmut, because you obviously are showing the broad.
How broad it is. And the fact that it can change. I brought that up because you have a lot of us going like, tradition and culture doesn't change. Dude, it has been changing.
It has been changing. It has even found ways of adapting, because let's, for example, say 150 years back, things were based upon the mighty shall survive or only the strongest live in the community.
Yeah.
And they were literally such initiation processes. Wherein, you know, have you heard of the football game, the variant that existed in the during the time of the Incas and the Aztecs and the Mayans? I don't know if it's the Mayans.
It's a variant of football during the Aztecs or the Mayans or the Inca.
So here it was, Helmut. It was an annual event whereby it's a five-man or two-man team. They play from one village against the team of another village. But it's, imagine squash. You know almost what squash does.
Yeah.
You have to hit the ball against the wall with a racket.
Mm-hmm.
Now imagine this as football. But instead of you facing the wall, we are facing each other. That's now the surface area. You've got the wall either on the right or on the left.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a small little ring. So it's like football, basketball slash. It's a small little ring. And you've got to kick that makeshift ball through that hole, the ring, to score points. Now, if you do that exercise, before that, we've got an ad break, guys.
Do you want to stand a chance of winning a 500 Namibian dollar ShopRite USave gift voucher? Then simply tell us, what makes ShopRite USave different from all the other stores? Send your answers on WhatsApp to 081-200-4144. That's 081-200-4144. You save. I save. We all save. At You Save.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the Eye.
Welcome back. So, punchline.
Yeah, so, okay, no, before the punchline. So, that variant, Helmut, itself had a punchline. Yes, sorry, there's the punchline. It had a punchline. The winning village, ne? Or the losing village, basically, not the winning. The losing village, their team was executed for sacrifice in that ancient South American sport of racquetball through a ring on the wall against each other, which was one of the first, you know, variants of the football variants that existed. Another one was the ancient Chinese football variant. That one was played between the nobility and the elites of ancient Chinese.
Wasn't that like where the whole idea of soccer comes from?
Not really. Mm. The, if you look at it in a probability scenario,
mm-hmm.
which country had the probability of mainstreaming this activity, this cultural activity?
Yeah.
The British had the best setting.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, football was exported by British miners and British soldiers.
From where?
In the 1800s, bro.
Exported?
Yeah, they exported it.
Oh, okay.
So the sport was initially just played between the elites
mm-hmm.
in British society. It's one of the famous stories that ever also translates into how rugby came about.
Mm-hmm.
Now, remember, I'm explaining to you a cultural product which became a commercial product, a mainstream commercial product.
There's a whole list of those.
There's a whole list of those, yeah. Which actually also, you know, sort of like explains why the Korean guys were more than happy to say, yeah.
Hand it over.
Come to us for the 10th Summit of Arts and Culture. Come to us. Come to
just
us.
Just come here.
In May. Not May. This was in June, guys. No, it was in May. This was held in May, guys. Even though the report only came out in this month, 26th July. So, the probability of these three variants of football to kick off
mm-hmm.
was you had to look at the one ultimately that had the best platform to export it. That's why you find Argentine clubs in Argentina still playing till today with English football names, with English names. You've got River Plate. You've got Boca Juniors. The word junior written in that English format, Boca Juniors. Newell's Old Boys is the other one's name. They've got an Arsenal. If people did not know, Argentina does have an Arsenal.
An Arsenal is in their military Arsenal or a football team Arsenal?
Football team Arsenal.
That's odd.
And it's similarly as old as the English Arsenal. Yes, it's 100 years old.
Holy cow.
Much of the Italian, if you had to look at the roots in terms of, if you wanted to find a correlating point, right? In terms of understanding this cultural export, which became the world's largest culturally commercialized product, because sport is obviously bigger than the movie sector. Sport is way bigger and it makes more money.
Yeah.
And it has the probability and the propensity to employ a lot more people than movies and the other arts, you know, the other entertaining sectors, which reflect culture. So if you look at sport itself and you go into the category of football, and you try to understand, okay, how did football become this big commercial entity? You look at who had the best probability of exporting this situation. All the Italian clubs, Helmut, are comparatively as old as all the English clubs. All the Spanish clubs, all the French clubs, all the German clubs, all the South American clubs, most of the South American clubs, all even the South African clubs, even some of the African clubs. Because why? You had a bunch of British soldiers kicking something around there on dusty African streets, and you obviously had impressionable young Africans going like, hey, that looks exciting. Then you go and discover you've got clubs like Orlando Pirates and Kaizen Chiefs in Johannesburg, which are close to 80, almost 100 years old.
Ew.
If you go look into the history of Kaizen Chiefs and Orlando Pirates, obviously Orlando Pirates is older than Amakhosi. Chiefs. And Amakhosi was a breakaway band of players, Orlando Pirates players, and they started Kaizer Chiefs. There was a dispute, internal dispute that happened there. You go look at Sundowns. It is also old. This is not something that showed up here last year. And suddenly, just because they've got a billionaire owner, no. Motsepe actually bought Sundowns from someone. Motsepe didn't start Sundowns. He bought it from someone. He bought the club.
Of course he did.
That's just one of the aspects in terms of also when people look at the socioeconomic correlation or relation between why are billionaires now moving into buying football clubs, which are cultural entities, which have massive socio-cultural anchors in a community or in a city. One of the aspects is obviously that they want, it's a tie for them, for these billionaires, to be close to the community that supports the sports endeavor. Look at Liverpool. Helmut, even though there is a correct thing in political science that states, if you feed the masses and if you distract the masses with entertainment sector, which is usually from the culture and arts and culture sector.
Yeah.
If you do that, you can successfully, you know, you can commit any kind of whatever activity you wish in the broader economy, like going to war, for example, and stuff like that, without having to seek general public consensus.
You already have the public approval part covered.
Technically. Or you can just bypass that because you can sort of, no one showed up because they're more worried about what Liverpool is doing over the weekend or what Manchester United is doing. And that's literally what happened to the British public.
Yeah, but that really damnifies you if that's even a correct English word. And that's because, you have a bunch of people right now, especially, you know, you have a bunch of people right now, you know, you ask them, okay, that's why you have like a half-cooked information all over YouTube of people telling you, you know what, the only, you know, the conflict between these two countries started last year. And now, for those of you, I mean, for you and I that, you know, for you and I that are like, that like to read history, we look at them and go like,
How do you just start at this one day? How do you start at one day?
What do you mean last year?
Yeah.
Now, and then you're like, okay, all right, now just sit down. Let me explain to you when this all started. And then you find out that, these individuals have the attention span of a fly. They can only hold...
Helmut, now you're being mean, bro. You're being mean.
look, social media.
Yo,
they can only focus on
a
fly.
Do you know how long a fly lasts?
I know.
A fly lives only for 7 days.
The attention span.
Which means it's always a split second.
All right. Now, before we continue with this very diabolical example.
We take a quick ad break, guys.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Before we continue, let's take a live read. This is a ShopRite live read. Get the hottest deal on all your spirit needs in winter at your favorite ShopRite liquor shop. Get your, get four 200 mil grants, triple wood blended Scotch whiskey for just $200 Namibian. Scottish Collie whiskey for $174.99 each. And for $154.99 each for Smirnoff 1818 vodka and Rock Bay spiced rum, and Gordon's gin for only $169.99. ShopRite liquor shop, hot deals at low price. Alcoholic drinks not for sale to persons under the age of 18. Now. Well, attention span of a fly.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is this is where I think it's okay. First of all, I think history is just as significant as as the present and the future.
Mm-hmm.
I more often I like to point out one of my favorite national anthem. Around the world is the Pakistani national anthem, because the last part of the Pakistan national anthem has a stanza that goes like interpreter of our past, glory of our presence, and the inspiration of the future. Basically going to show, basically indicating how the past, the future, and the how the past, the present, and the future are all very enlightening when you for someone who is very basically interested in looking at them.
Mm.
How does he know the Pakistan national anthem? Give me a break. No,
don't worry. I have to listen every time I watch rugby internationally, even though I conform to watching sport, because, in many cases, sport is a lot more brutal than having to listen to, a commentator telling you half-baked lies on the TV in a debating show, and hence the reason why I sometimes don't look at debates. I look at real academic discourse, conversation that is rich with content. I would rather watch a sports match where I can literally see
what's going on,
the facts,
the practicality.
The one is stronger than the other one, and you even see it in a brutal honesty. There's complete transparency. Yes, you paid to watch the match.
Hang on a second. I think it was earlier this month. I'm not sure if that was the Austrian or the Swiss, national team that was beaten by the, I think that's under 15.
Are you talking about the women's team?
Yeah, the women's team was beaten by the under 15 and people went bananas. I'm like, okay, now let's just put this debate at rest.
Yeah.
15-year-old
boys.
15-year-old boys that are running on testosterone.
Helmut.
Yeah.
You're now making it look like a comic book scenario.
Yeah.
Imagine now
they're
running
all
on.
They're all fueled up.
Yeah, but they're still developing.
And a lot of energy.
Yes.
You want to compete with those ones? That's a bad idea.
And obviously in that scenario, they're going to run faster. They're going to run further.
Uh-huh.
Now, by the time that same 15-year-old becomes 21, he is way bigger, heavier, and faster than what he was on 15.
Welcome to Biology 101.
Yeah. So I love those particular discussions because it's straightforward. I don't like watching boxing because I believe it's too brutal for me. But
look, I know.
Boxing and MMA. I don't like watching them.
I like watching boxing if there are certain Namibian individuals involved. But other than that, no.
Yeah. So when you look at what sport does, which is a cultural indicator as well, there's also a rugby variant of rugby.
Hmm.
Yeah, and it is way more brutal, Hamid. It's held every year in the month of August or September in the city of Florence in Italy. Yeah.
Okay, so let me get this right. They say rugby itself is known as a very brutal sport.
Yeah.
But there's another
rugby variant.
That is more brutal than that.
Yes.
Okay. So, I'm talking about the UFC.
No.
Okay.
UFC is not played in teams.
Yeah, I know.
UFC,
Whoever came up with that cage idea was...
UFC is known as Mixed Martial Arts, MMA. That's UFC's name. The sport's name.
Mm-hmm.
The rugby variant that I'm talking about, because rugby stems from soccer. Because a English schoolboy at the school, at the private... It's now a private school. At the private school of rugby in the town of rugby. No. Yeah, at this private school of rugby in the town of rugby in England. Yes. It's the town's name. The boy's name is William Webb Ellis. Now, this is the fairy tale. This is the fairy tale they love telling us every World Cup year, when it's the Rugby World Cup year.
Yeah.
The boy's name was William Webb Ellis. Webb Ellis was obviously an elite of the British society back then in the 1800s, son. And Ellis became fed up with the soccer match he was playing.
With all the rules of don't touch the ball.
No, but here's the thing. Back then when it was for the elites, how your child went to school back then in the 1800s, was that your child was wearing your family colors. Now, if the two schools were playing, it was literally a scenario of you see this potpourri of colors on the field.
You can tell that one is from this family, that one is from this family, you know, based on the attire they're wearing.
Yeah.
Okay.
So William Webb Ellis grabbed the ball. The football back then was also slightly bigger than the standard soccer ball that we now see it as. He picked up the ball, put it under his arm, and homeboy ran. And when he ran, because everyone was like, "Brah, what are you doing? You know that's against the rules. You're not supposed to play with your hands."
Yeah.
There are designated team players on each side that can play with your hands.
Yeah.
The first rugby tackle was also given to him. Because there was another kid that was fed up with his nonsense and, you know, just went
tackled
like,
him.
Just went like, you know, here's a good rib, here's a good rib cracker, you know? Let's keep it going.
Have some.
Yeah. And from there, the sport was born. He didn't score the try. He didn't put it down in the goal post zone where the goalie was. Because everyone tried to play by the rules. He was obviously given another rule, a future rule indicator to a new sport that he just created on a sports pitch. Now, when I indicate that to you, Helmut, the rugby variant that exists has nothing to do with soccer in Florence. It still is practiced today as a cultural indicator of the city of Florence. Because many people would think that in European context, some European countries were unified from the get-go. No, they weren't.
Oh, no, no, no.
The city of Florence had their own influential elite society, most notably the Medicis. So if you don't know who I'm talking about, they were actually the inventors and creators of what we now know as the modern-day banking system.
Yeah.
And guess when they created it? Back in the jolly old 1500s of the Renaissance period of Europe, when, you know, the Catholic Church was still, you know, deciding laws and being your judge and also your police officer.
And scaring you to death.
Yes.
With, you know what?
With the Bible and all that.
If you don't pay, that place is going to be hotter.
And the aspect of, what was that thing's name? Of, I almost said serfdom. What is that system?
What's that?
That flourished under the medieval set. The system that was replaced now, obviously, with what we now know as capitalism.
Is it usury?
Not usury. Usury has to do with credit and with the financial system. A usury note is that one that says
a promissory note,
but I am, instead of I'm paying you back the $100 that I owe you, I'm paying you $100 plus extra because I agreed to something known as what we now know as interest, is the interest indicator.
So it's just the names that change.
That's all. We are sitting with someone else's culture in our modern day banking system.
Isn't the word bank itself, its origin can be traced back to the Italian word for bench, because the early money exchanges were done on benches.
Exactly. Now, what the Medicis did was literally say, let's centralize that activity. Now, you still see money exchanges if you go to places.
It's someone's cultural practice that we have.
Exactly. If you go to Zambia and some of these other African countries where you sometimes want to quickly exchange a US dollar or this, you meet a bunch of guys that are walking around with stacks of cash.
Man.
Guys, and it has nothing. Those guys don't care about the national foreign exchange indicators of their country. The price is 50 times what the central bank of that country says. They don't care.
I said that, I went through that when I went to Zambia in 2017. I go through all the border processing. When I get the other side, my uncle calls me because he's already in Zambia. It's like, you'll need to catch a bus, but you can't use the Namibian dollar. You'll find a bunch of guys, just by the side.
It's the same guys I had to access.
Man, you find these guys with stacks of money. Now, the thing is.
Of that waterproof money of this.
The thing is, the Windhoek part of me is going, ash! There's a reason why this business doesn't exist in Windhoek, because the way this guy and his money will disappear.
They don't even want South African rand. They'll tell you, give us US or Euro.
And
they will only exchange you. The guys I met in Livingston in 2011.
Uh-huh.
No, end of 2010. Nah. Then Livingston. So I did the unfortunate thing of coming over the bridge.
Me
and my two brothers with, we had a too much US dollar on us.
Mm-hmm.
But, because at that stage, the Zambian shops and the restaurants were saying we have set, they've got in their currency.
Wasn't inflation like that bad at this point?
Yeah, it was. But the prices then were all still in kwacha.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously you need to uphold the national flag through a national symbol, which is your money, your currency.
Yeah.
And we had cash on us because you can't come here to the Bureau de Changes here in Windhoek in the capital and ask for Zambian kwacha, because they will tell you there's no value in holding that money in Namibia.
Why?
So now I had to. We had a couple of South African rand, and we had a couple of US dollar on us. Rand, when you walk into any of the shops, you know, because there's a lot of South African shops, and US dollar if you wish to get some more local currency, you know, to in order to do the thing, to you know buy services and goods, and. The first day, and that was a Sunday that I meet those money exchanger guys there, right opposite. I still remember the backpacker there in Livingston. Its name is Fawlty Towers, named after the famous British TV show, Fawlty Towers, with John Gleeson. No? Yeah, John Gleeson. It's like shifty guys, man. They're sitting with wads of cash. I was like, hey, no wonder you guys hang together, ne? Because if one of you were walking alone, you know, you would literally be the asset forfeiture department's target. And, you know, you exchange, but those guys, and you stand, you know what the exchange rate is in your mind. You know what it is. Those guys give you, because I mean, they are open on a Sunday when the bank is not open on a Sunday in Livingston.
Very flexible.
Very, super flexible. So yeah, first taste experience. South African rand only works so far, even though it's an international currency. Forget about walking around with Namibia, even though we have the fanfare here about new coins and new notes.
I think
that new notes and new coins won't help you even in Botswana.
I think it was a good thing that when I was in Zambia, it was in 2017, and they had taken care of that inflation at the time.
Yeah.
Because I was able to, I only exchanged like a small portion of it that I needed to, for the bus. And then, the rest I was, as soon as I got to urban areas, I just, I just went to the ATM.
And then when you withdrew the money, it was like,
don't ask the charges.
It was like a bank bag full.
No, it was actually I think it's still the case to this day. I think their currency at this point, if it haven't changed, is that their currency is a little, I think, a dollar or two stronger than ours.
Yeah. And it has improved greatly.
Greatly improved. Yeah. So back to the cultural discussion. My broadness that I was talking about was that culture is very important in a way that it plays a lot of us, it's found in a lot of aspects of our lives, from entertainment to the way that we conduct our lives on a daily basis. Take the entertainment, for example. Football is one of it. Mm-hmm. That's a culture. And one example that I more often give is bungee jumping. That's someone's culture. It's someone's, rite of passage. If you want to get married, jump from a height.
Smash your head into some soft sand from 30 meters up.
Yeah, and don't die, most importantly. If you die, we'll just say, well, the God said no. But well,
you really have to hope you are the shortest guy in that line.
Man, that's painful. And those guys...
because if you're taller than me even...
You cooked.
You and the earth will know each other very well.
Hug of, the last hug. But, and then when you look at the entertainment sector, for example, that's actually one of those places where you find a lot of, I think that would be the best way to, to preserve culture. A bit, you will have to be there to ensure that you have, a large degree of cultural accuracy being portrayed.
Yeah.
Which is why every time that, every time that movies try to feature a different culture, they want to interact with the natives that practice this culture to ensure that they are not offended in any way by portraying them in a way that they don't actually, in a way that they don't like.
Let's put a bookmark
there. There is a bookmark. Why?
Yeah.
Marvel.
Not just Marvel. In a Namibian context,
Before
you quickly continue,
The
bookmark I'm putting in there, now I'm in the bad cop zone again.
So, keep going. You're doing great.
So 2 years. Now, I've never seen this movie.
Yeah.
No, I've never, just to be clear on everyone, but I've heard this movie before because someone wanted to contact me last year out of Germany to try and do a documentary on this particular thing. Now, I did not agree upon it because... these people were acting too shifty, and just so the people, I don't like shifty people. You talk directly to me. So I said in the discussion, the meeting I'm having with the people, I hear this movie gets mentioned. Now I saw this movie being produced in 2022. No, 2021. I don't know if you remember, Helmut, just as you and Chicken were starting the Free Your Mind discussion here with us at Eagle FM. Yeah. There was a bunch of production trucks, like movie production trucks here at Windhoek High School in a specific day or in a specific week.
I think I've seen those.
You might have seen it there alongside Robert Mugabe. Yeah. If you've ever traveled during that, if you can remember back to, it was six or seven similar trucks standing next to each other or behind each other.
Yeah.
On the one side of the pavement where the museum is, the fort and the Independence Museum.
The Independence Museum, yeah.
So they were shooting a movie there based upon Namibia's genocide discussion. And it was a German production company doing this. And they were hiring a lot of local talent and all that.
Yeah.
And I spoke to, I don't have his number anymore because with these Android phones, you think you are saving the number on your Google account, but the number is saved to the phone. And if you go and look for the thing, if the phone, you change phones, the numbers are not transferred if it's not on the Google account, I speak to the guy that the local Namibian, what's the word we like using? Policy,
A local content policy?
Local content participant, the Namibian local content participant in the production. And it was literally based upon that tumultuous period of Namibia's history during when the genocide period took place.
Yeah.
The movie goes back to Germany and is screened in Germany. The movie speaks there of grotesque historical inaccuracies, Hamoud. To such a level that when some Namibian journalists found out here and they also went and viewed the thing, that's why I didn't want to watch this movie after I heard these things.
Yeah.
That there were such severe historical inaccuracies. It almost looked like as if in some cases that what was portrayed was in essence the glorifying of one specific aspect of the storyline, the narrative, and ignoring the overwhelming investment and presence of another narrative, which is a factual narrative, which has been written about, explored, researched and all that. To such an extent, Hamoud, the movie was apparently, I say apparently because I didn't see these comments, and most of them would have been in German or hosted somewhere else, the movie, the reviews, was a complete and utter shredding of the movie.
Because they were like, okay, what type of nonsense is this?
Exactly. It was a complete and utter shredding of the movie. Something similar also that obviously happened with another particular movie. And here I won't mention names because these guys are a lot closer here in Namibia.
No kidding.
I won't mention names. But it also speaks about a specific historical time period in Namibia's history. And once again, but there, you know, you allow there for some sort of a creative freedom to take place because it does conform to what we know in terms of history books and certain stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it sort of like glorifies an element of Namibia's history. It glorifies it in a sense. So that was allowed. However, ad break after this.
Some things kind of have to be together, right? Imagine, pop, but no flakes. Never. Or a goal without a celebration. And friends, but no Tassenberg.
Now that's just not right. Tassenberg, best together. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Lipura nenge no wapomba eva tere ulikoni maondo toto ingida ashike kapeno nweko dite opoye ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshe fa ya pombo kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi kayo loka opone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa Ninge pata fanona, Monica ko Eagle FM, onore tatimwe bali heari, nola natu, heari bali no heari. Ile ko derewa, nora hetatu natu, bali o hetatu atatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. If you just tuned in, the time is 16 minutes past the hour of 5, and we are talking about cultural preservation. Cultural preservation in the 21st century, more like with the help of technology. But the main discussion is based on the 10th World Summit report, the 10th World Summit on Arts and Culture that took place in Seoul, South Korea, in May. And they did cover, and they did cover a bunch of things. But before I go to that, please just finish your point, and then I can come back to, example of, of historical accuracy in terms of the use of the entertainment sector as a cultural preservation.
So, the issue about historical accuracy, Hamoud, is one that is. If you're going to tell a story about, let's say about a factual event of a country or of a community or of people.
If you're going to make any reference about someone's culture or language, at least get it right.
Now, this has been the biggest issue that historians or lovers of the subject matter of history have with the creatives.
Yeah.
The creatives have a sense that they come and tell you that other, I almost used the negative terminology there, but that other, sort of like it's an attitude of laissez-faireness and, you know what? I'll do whatever I want.
Let's just throw some entertainment, aesthetic to it.
Yeah. It's my movie production anyway.
Yeah.
However, historians and lovers of history will always tell, the creatives, if you're going to tell a story about a factual event, You stick to the facts. You can probably change the names of the people if the family members or descendants of those people are still alive.
Okay, but here's the Now,
if they're still alive.
That last part is most important. But here's the thing. Let's look at it this way. I think this also has to do with the way that the entertainment sector, more like the entertainment sphere, more like the rules that it's that it follows.
Yeah.
Let's just use the movie Titanic as an example.
Yeah. Which was a factual event.
Yeah, it was a factual event.
But
except there was no romance and the people were sinking, freezing and dying.
Exactly. Even though, supposedly, the auntie that was interviewed at the start of the movie.
The one that was throwing diamonds in the sea?
The old auntie, apparently she was a survivor and her story now is the one that sort of like defines the event of the Titanic.
Yeah, everyone wished they were on a sinking ship. That's what the entertainment will do to you.
But to who did that story appeal to?
When you
look at the movie's marketing,
mm-hmm.
what was the movie genred as? As a romance.
Yeah.
But this is...
Okay, to who did they appeal to? Okay, I think I have an answer.
Do you understand that? When I said romance?
Yeah.
It's still... When you look at the Titanic, it's still one of the highest grossing romance stories of the past 35 years of movie making.
Yeah.
But the movie Titanic is a historical event based upon what can happen when your industrialization goals become...
Too ambitious?
Too ambitious, in a sense. Not to say that there was anything faulty with the ship. It was just that the ship was promoted when the ship was launched. You know, like we now...
Sank during its maiden voyage.
Exactly. As what happens to us Namibian journalists now.
Yeah.
Because of oil and gas and green hydrogen and everything, we are now, invited to come and watch us launch this. Come and watch us launch this. Come and watch us launch this. Now, it's the same thing that happened back then. 150 years ago,
mm-hmm.
To the media. And the promotion was made by the shipbuilder, the company that built the ship, the Titanic,
mm-hmm.
that this is the biggest ship in the world. And it's unsinkable. It's, what's the other word they love using? Which is another word for undefeated or undefeatable. Indefatigable. You can't defeat this thing. Indefatigable means you cannot be beaten.
So it's invincible.
Invincible meant that you did fight. Indefatigable means you can never even think of fighting and winning.
And Iceberg was like, oh yeah.
Iceberg was like, horse baba.
Come here.
I'm here. You'll only see my forehead, ne? You don't know how big my body is. And what happened?
The whole thing went down.
The ship's captain forgot about, the truest indication of the fears of sailing through the North Atlantic.
Yeah, so they just decided, let's create more headlines than we already have.
Yeah. So, it was not a ship that was an icebreaker.
No, it wasn't.
It was not an icebreaker. Now, even then, how many people do you know in Namibia that knows what an icebreaker is? It's not someone that starts making jokes at a party. No. Breaking the ice.
Oh dear.
An icebreaker was literally, and they still make icebreakers, dear listeners.
Yeah, they still do. Especially in northern countries.
Yeah. It's a ship that has to go to the north and the south poles. And they have to sail through ice. They have to break the ice. So you make yourself a path. It's like thinking of a, what do you call that thing? A bulldozer. When it comes to clearing a bush or a piece of, of the environment. A bulldozer makes a path.
Yeah.
Because it clears out a path.
It's basically like attaching a bulldozer in front of your car so that it clears the path for...
But here's the worst part thing of the ship.
Yeah.
The ship is literally that front part that's clearing the path.
They basically take advantage of the weight and shape.
Yeah. And also the momentum that the ship comes with.
Yeah. Wait, which one is a bow and which one is a stern?
What you're talking about, bow and stern, is most the front and the back part.
Yeah.
And then there is port and something side, which indicates left and right. Port and
Yeah, I think
the port side is left. I know.
Yeah, I think the front part is the stern. That's the one that basically has the sort of like shape and also momentum. Like you just pointed out, factors into how good that ship is going to be to be breaking. Breaking through. You know what layer of ice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah. So on that point.
Yeah.
When people look at the aspect of what I just indicated in terms of historical accuracy, I'm in the camp, because there's no right way of saying this, but I'm in the camp that says, you know, if you're going to make a movie or a production about a factual event in history, in human history, where there were actually known figures existing, stick to the facts of the story. Don't embellish it and don't make it look, oh, there's another famous movie that does that. It was a Ben Affleck movie, where they did the Iran revolution.
Oh.
Where the Iranian students, the Iranian university students that stormed the American embassy.
In the 1970s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the embassy personnel that were hiding in the Canadian ambassador's residence. That movie was spoken of from a perspective of, from an American perspective, just citing, it wasn't trying to espouse any propaganda, but it was feeding into the propaganda narrative that was existing in the US at that time.
And we are the good guys.
We are the good guys. The Iranians are all bad and all that. Hanakam, they forget that there was Kim Kardashian and her family. Kim Kardashian's dad is the surname is Kardashian is a Persian surname.
No kidding.
Her father is an Iranian lawyer or Persian lawyer. He's the guy that defended OJ Simpson.
Makes a lot of sense. But.
Anyway, you know.
We're not going to dive into that.
We're not going to go there. We're going too far.
I think, if you want to understand just how sensitive people are when it comes to how you portray their culture, watch a lot of movies that are based on people's culture. Then you just, read the comments and look, listen to some commentators and the things that they'll be like, okay, you know what, culturally, that's not how it's done.
Yeah.
I know it's meant for entertainment, but if you want to get the historical context of what this story is based on, what you're going to see is that, this is actually was a misinterpretation. Of course, it adds to the spice of making the whole thing entertainment worthy.
Yeah.
But, that's what now opens a floodgate for a bunch of historical inaccuracies.
Yeah.
And a lot of people obviously are going to perceive that much differently. In one of my favorite TV shows, that's The Big Bang Theory, the character of, the guy that plays Howard Wolowitz.
The main character.
No, that's Sheldon Cooper. That's a character played by Jim Pearson.
But Sheldon is not the main character.
Isn't Sheldon the main character?
Sheldon is not the main character.
It's just the annoying character.
But he became the main character. Remember, the storyline had to start with,
Leonard,
Sheldon, and
what Penny.
The blonde girl.
Kelly Cooper,
yeah. The story started from the three of them.
Yeah.
And then the story started being dominated by Sheldon, the character Sheldon.
That's my sport.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
This is me.
Yeah, I know. So the thing is, Howard is this guy that was casted as someone that could speak multiple languages. He spoke, Mandarin Chinese, French, and and Russian. Now, the part where he speaks Russian is where he compliments Penny by saying something like ti ochin krasiva diavushka. Now the thing is, ti ochin krasiva, you are very beautiful. That part was accurate, but diavushka is an older woman. Diavuchka, that's a younger woman. That was not a compliment.
It's like I was told not to use one of the two words in Mandarin for young woman, lady. So you have in Mandarin you have gunyang and you have it's gunyang and xiaojie, but gunyang is more formal. Xiaojie is more like you are asking for that late night service.
Oh.
From the specific economic activity that's in most cases not It doesn't feature as the main economic activity anyway.
So the thing is, a lot of people roasted the character on that part. I'm like, okay, you know, just leave the guy. Someone wrote that script, and then he read. He had to read it.
Yeah.
Now the thing is, well, whether you're going to use, well, it turns out the word Dyavushka, whether you're going to use the word, how the word shh. And ch comes out indicates just how young that person is.
Mm.
So the younger the person, the more the sharp the ch is going to become.
Yeah.
And also the older, the more that ch is going to fade into sh. That's painful. But anyway, one thing that you see is that, cultural portrayal in the entertainment industry is somewhat to some degree, and I don't want to get into our future subject here, and that's the way that, the way that the media portrays, portrays certain events. Again, media, just using print media, for example, is more based on, it's somewhat like what we see on YouTube these days. It's based on clickbait. Just have a fancy creative headline that will attract your reader, because the more people that are attracted, the more they are going to buy, and the more money you're going to make.
Yeah.
And it makes a lot of economic sense. Except making things sensational is one way of starting a riot. You'd be thinking, you know what, I was just making things sensational so I can sell. But then you will end up with a bunch of people that are angry.
Well, it's the same thing that now has happened also here in another cultural product that is in some of the print media aspects. Where people have directly told me, I don't read certain particular platforms because of the sensationalism that is used. And you see it. It's an obvious exercise that tells you, read here, Dwight.
Make it sell.
So, you've got everything sorted for tomorrow?
Yeah, man. Meat, spice, poikis ready. Even got some playlists lined up, bro.
And the crew? They're all coming, right?
Howie, everyone's in. It's gonna be lekker.
Wait. What about the tassies?
Bruh,
you can't get here without tassim, bruh. It's like cabana without salsa, dog. Tassenberg. Best together. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
That iconic taste of Heineken. Loved in Germany, Amsterdam, Argentina, and Namibia. That crisp and balanced taste of Heineken. Loved around the world. Enjoy that refreshing thirst. Only made possible by Heineken's unique 5-star credentials. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Great news. Imper just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imper? Get all exclusive features for just $36 a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
And welcome back. Now, we're still on the, on the discussion of cultural preservation. Now, one piece of the entertainment sector that gets on my nerves every time that I think about a culture. Actually, two, especially coming out of Hollywood. But I don't. I only blame them 50%. One, there is no such thing as an African accent.
Donkey Helmut.
African accent? You have got to be kidding me. Which one? Bobo for Nigeria or... Because Africa is diverse.
Oh, they show up here with... What's that guy from the Lawrence of the Arabia movies?
have you seen Wakanda? We do not do that thing here. What?
And then...
Which part of Africa is that English coming from?
And then in between they had... They had a dress code from the Himba. They had a dress code from some of the guys from Central Africa, a dress code. And then some people were showing up here dressed up literally like the Sun tribes. I was like, hey, what are these guys doing? What are these guys doing? Mashing all African cultures together in one
just
pot.
Just lump them together. And this is now I'm saying, yeah, that's one. African accent. There is no African accent, but that accent is more often used in a, you know in a movie of anything or anyone a movie that features anything or anyone anyone or anything that revolves around you know African reference.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, that's one, the African accent. The second part is first of all, Africa is a continent. A very diverse one.
Yeah.
That means if you are going to portray Africans, you really have to be specific. Which African?
But then it becomes a promotion activity.
Exactly.
Of one specific group.
Now that's the reason why I say I blame the 50% is that if we want to portray ourselves.
Yeah.
If we want accuracy in a way that we are portrayed.
Go make your own movie.
We're going to have to do it ourselves.
Exactly.
Yeah, you can't, I mean, you can't expect to be portrayed in a way that you want on someone's budget.
Exactly. You are right, Hamo. Do you know what's one of the funniest things I've ever heard in my life when it comes to the commercial cultural scene?
Well,
so the British, or was it the Americans? A British film company. So there's a movie. Let me start from this. There's a movie. Oh, don't worry. I've watched a lot of movies. There's a movie known as Anna Karenina. Now, Anna Karenina is one of the Russian classics. I don't know who it is. Tchaikovsky is a composer. I don't know if it's Dostoevsky or the other classical Russian writers from Imperial Russia, that period.
Yeah.
But the person that writes, who wrote Anna Karenina. Now, remember, I'm describing you Russian cultural heritage. Nah. At that stage, the Russians also had nobility. And they obviously had an emperor. They didn't have a king. They had an emperor, which was known as a tsar.
Yeah.
Anna Karenina is a love story, is a troubled love story of a noble woman, obviously of an elite standing in Russian society, who starts an affair with a young cavalry officer in the Imperial Russian army. Now, this obviously sets the scene for intrigue, excitement. Yes, it's the classical trope. It's the classical narrative for any love story that many women would love to subscribe. I'm sorry, ladies, that I'm slightly now keep on throwing you guys into the boat here. But I've seen these movies as well, and I know I sometimes see the reactions that you guys have. So don't, I'm sorry for that identification. So the English version that we know of stars Keira Knightley, the Hollywood star. She's the noblewoman. And the male counterpart, the opposing actor, the man, is played by Aaron, what's the English actor's name? But anyway, he's the guy that plays in the movie, this recent Marvel movie, The Hunter. What's the guy's name, man? That came out last year.
Yeah.
How could I forget the Marvel character's name? But anyway, he plays that character. So, when they showed up in Russia and they were now about to start their scenes, because remember, an American and a British production comes with a lot of money, and they show up and they want to be flashy and they've got all the tech and everything. So they show, and they want to be at all the historical scenes, because you've got to set up the scene in the movie.
Yeah.
And they show up for production, everything. So, and now obviously what all countries are doing, where we've heard about the term joint venture and local content participation that we are now screaming at our top of our lungs about in the oil and gas sector. Many other countries are literally they are the flag bearers for this particular stuff. So in Hollywood, they've got to work, and in the British film industry, they've got to work with the local movie production companies, you know, for joint venture and all that. They show up, and then one of the guys asks the local Russian, crew. Yeah. So what do you guys think of us working on this? Now, this is now a British guy. Say, telling me, what do you guys think of us working on Anna Karenina? The guy goes like, nah, you know what? Every year in Russia, we make like 50 versions of Anna Karenina coming out every time, every year. And the way that British actor or that British producer explained it, he said, my face fell so fast. Because here he thought he's standing there with his English perspective, his British perspective,
yeah,
about a Russian story that the Russians know since birth.
So they make like, you know, 1,000 of them every year.
They make TV series, they make books, they reprint the thing, they make every...
Hang on a second, now that you point that out, I think it's every year, a movie about Christmas love story comes out.
Exactly! But you know where Christmas comes, do you know where that red thing, that whole thing comes from? Interesting fun fact, Coca-Cola wanted to promote a soft drink, its drink, in the 1800s. To convince people to drink Coke during their winter season, which is ice cold.
Literally.
Now, what I did not know is that the Catholic Church had a mechanism. Like an annual review of, an annual review of which saints are the most famous saints. And who do we keep? You know, like bringing out your annual report of decisions we took and things that happened. It's culture. Culture is everywhere. I don't know why it took me the better part of 35 years to understand the value of culture.
Yeah.
Because everyone kept speaking about aspects of, no, show up and go to some Kubas. And then I'm just going like, but my fun is Lynx. I'm not a fun Vike, you know? I'm not a Kluter. I'm not a Muton. I'm not one of those clans that fought at that little skirmish. The Germans considered it a skirmish.
Oh. Because they lost?
The Germans made a strategic retreat, Helmut. Do you know why they made it?
Mm-hmm.
The Germans heard that the South Africans were in Kietmans. And the Germans were like, you know what? We can't be dealing with these bunch of farmers. We can't be wasting ammo here. We've got to go and, you know, defend other positions.
Mm-hmm.
And like I keep telling people, if you understand this in a military context or in a colonial context, the Germans, Windhoek was not the capital city for the Germans.
What was?
Otjiwarongo.
Huh?
Yes. Otjiwarongo was the actual central
administrative everything.
All that of Namibia.
Huh.
So if people are asking about the historical relevance of a town like Otjiwarongo, Otjiwarongo is supposed to be technically the capital of Namibia, not Windhoek. But because Windhoek had a lot of military strategic points, and because the fort, which is the oldest building, the oldest constructed building by the Germans in Namibia, the fort was the oldest.
Yeah. But so it became a defense, strategic defense issue. What?
Exactly.
Oh.
So the Germans had to withdraw out of Windhoek as well, because Windhoek was also not a very well defendable position. Even though the fort sits on hills, or sits on a massive hill,
mm-hmm.
one of the highest hills in Windhoek. If you stand at the fort,
yeah.
or even if you stand at that German church, the Christuskirche,
yeah.
ne, you have such a... If you had to look around and you had
just
to...
a wide panoramic view of some sort.
And you could see from miles, kilometers away, any potential harm or enemy. Jan Jonker Afrikaner chose the best spot for his farm, which was there where that fort stands.
Fort?
The Alta Vista. This where Windhoek High School is.
Hennisbeck, you know, restaurant, the hotel.
No, that castle is someone's
private property.
Not just that. It was someone else's. It was the German administrator of the time's personal residence.
That guy picked the one excellent view area.
And no, sorry, I'm lying. The Tintin Palast, which is our parliament building.
Mm-hmm.
The Tintin Palast was the German colonial administrator's personal residence and office building. That's why that house is so big.
Did it decided to remodify everything? It's like, you know what?
With a courtyard and all that. So, if you work from that particular indication, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, people would tell me, yeah, Dwight, you are from Rehoboth. I grew up there. But the thing is, if you look at my surname is technically not tied to the celebration of some Kubas every year, because my family name was not participating there. that was a bunch of other clans and families that were initially there. And that means that the town was slightly smaller than that. When you get into a discussion about, you know, trying to tell a story of factual events in history, I'll give you one of the best examples. This is now in my good cop phase. In my bad cop phase. Sorry, I'm a bad cop because you're still playing good cop.
Yeah.
There was a wonderful Korean drama show, but it wasn't a drama show because it was more based upon an action thriller scenario. That's the genre. But it was set in a historical context of Korea. Now, you might have seen they wear these elaborate pieces, you know, like trying to, of a period yesterday.
Cultural attire, yeah, of the time.
So the period that many of these Korean filmmakers love to tap into is the Joseon era. If you look up the Joseon era, it was a specific era when Korea was an independent kingdom, the two Koreas together.
Mm.
And Joseon was another name, I think, for one of their cities. I think it's Seoul, or I think it's, is it Busan, or is it, it's either Seoul or Busan, one of the two cities. That's where the emperor of Korea lived, or the king of Korea lived. And the Koreans had many cultural exchanges with the Chinese. They had more cultural exchanges with Imperial China than with Imperial Japan.
Yeah, well,
because the Japanese loved invading them.
I'll
mention that fact.
The Japanese were not very good at knocking.
No. They weren't even good at sending even a messenger.
Just blast in.
They just show up and say, hello. Everything here is ours.
This which was yours yesterday, now it's ours.
Now today's us. Yeah. So, this series, I would started off wonderful. 1, 2, 3 episodes. And then, you see radio silence from there. Now, when is 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 coming? You know what happened in Korea?
Mm-hmm.
People were blasting the TV show on social media, going like, you are not even historically accurate. You are using this. People didn't wear that. They didn't have gunpowder here. They didn't do that there. This was not the period. Why are you making women look like that? Why is your story like this? And then they had to cancel the show.
Okay, but isn't the way? Okay. I'm beginning to think like, isn't this where we should now draw a line between a documentary and a movie? Because a movie is just made for entertainment. It should be entertaining, otherwise it would be boring as heck, and you may as well just make a documentary out of it.
But here's the thing, Helmut. Yeah. There is currently a movie production happening, between Valfus. It's based on a storyline between Valfus and Swakopmund. Anyone that lives in Valfus and Swakopmund would have heard of this. It's based upon the ghost lady that shows up there between Valfus and Swakopmund.
Huh?
Yeah. Well, I'm not venturing up into any supernatural context.
Ghost.
Yeah, but
literally.
But it's based upon telling the story of, why does this entity exist here? And why has it impacted so many people that live in Valfus and Swakopmund, who drive every day that 25-kilometer stretch between the two towns? And at night, you will see that entity at a certain time of the night.
Okay, now you're scaring me.
And then it gets into your car.
You're not helping.
I know I'm not helping. But I've got there are too many testimonies that I know of. People that I personally know that have told me the same thing. And as someone that knows, in a research context, in research,
yeah,
if you've got multiple independent people telling you the same thing without them having colluded with each other beforehand,
yeah,
telling you the story, then you are bound to be, to say,
you know, there must be some truth to this.
There must be some fact to this. Yeah. There must be some truth
to this. Okay, so what if I drive that stretch with, take for example, across, you know, a bunch of garlics and stuff.
This is not a vampire movie. Okay, You're not talking about Dracula.
Worth a shot.
But then there's also a lot of stories about Dracula. And that's also what is disheartening. And then you get a bunch of people that go haywire with their imagination, where they sometimes make a movie so good, they market it so good, you end up arguing with your older siblings about, yeah, this movie says it's based on real events. And they tell you, Dwight, calm down. You're just a 16-year-old. The movie is not real.
It's Dracula.
No, Blair Witch Project.
Oh, dear Lord. No.
They even wrote, you know, advertorials. So an advertorial is literally you are paying for the space in a newspaper, on a website, or on a blog to post whatever message you're posting there. And the literally, it was a write-up about the movie, and the movie saying, you know, telling the readers of this report, it's based upon true events. And when people had to go look up in America, in reality, just read up about the controversies of marketing a movie that is based on a fictional plot, yes, as if it was a factual event that happened in real life. Because the marketers in the US or in that part of the world, obviously, they obviously try to pull the maximum strings they can to create as much fanfare and controversy, because the thinking back then was, if you are controversial, you are selling more, you have a higher social...
So what you're just looking...
Social currency or something.
You have a wider reach, obviously. You have a lot of people that wants to... gossip is more what everyone is going to be looking forward to. So what are they saying now?
Yeah. So back then, I mean, as an impressionable 16-year-old, I literally thought that the Blair Witch Project was a real event of people getting lost because there was some vengeful spirit running around in some part of South Carolina or Connecticut in the USA, literally abducting, you know, unsuspecting campers who were out there in the bush just, you know, bushwhacking. But no, it was a made-up plot. It was a completely made-up plot. Like the scenario of the movie franchise, the paranormal movie franchise.
Oh yeah,
that used the filmmaking method of it looks like a security camera. That's all they do. That's all. If you analyze the movie, how it was made, it's the laziest way of making a movie. In essence, Helmut, it's the laziest way of making a movie. But you know what? The thing made millions every year. Every time when a new paranormal movie, and there's a new one that came out last year even, every time when they brought out a paranormal activity movie,
mm-hmm,
the movie is making, because it piques people's interest.
And look, I can't believe we don't have witchcraft stories. Not the, you know, Nigerian, not the Nigerian type of, you know, of witchcraft story. Let me just say African movies witchcraft, we must improve on our ghost CGI, man. Because, you know.
No, you, look, Hamut, there's enough knowledge to properly act the part.
Dwight, you're making my point, because there's no way a ghost is going to show up in a movie wearing an Arsenal jersey.
I know.
Because at this point,
maybe he was buried with the Arsenal jersey.
At this point, everyone is going.
Maybe he was buried with the Arsenal jersey.
First of all, Arsenal fans will want to murder you.
Because they were like, hey, bruh. Are you busy bewitching us for the next season again?
What do you mean again?
They haven't won a league, Hamut, ever since the Invincibles. Are you an Arsenal fan?
Nah.
Yes, you are, Hamut.
No, my cousin is.
Oh, you're okay.
Yeah.
Okay, now you've got ammunition to grill him. Five dimensions. You can even grill him in multiple realities of life.
You know what's the funny thing? I'm not a very sport guy, but I'm surrounded by sports lovers. My cousin is an Arsenal one, and I know, a bunch of people that live in close proximity to me, one supports, actually the majority of them are Man U supporters.
Mm.
You have one Man City supporter. So, every time I try to talk to them and I get somewhat of a dull response.
Mm.
I go online and try to find out when last did they have a match and, you know, and how did they perform. More often, something has to do with that. But, you know, they'll be like, no, we bought this player for this amount of money, but we are both broke. I mean, it doesn't make sense. But,
and that's why I love the...
I don't understand soccer people.
No, soccer fans. That's why I love, in many cases, the person that will not care anything about sport,
mm-hmm,
will always be fascinated by why you have a bunch of men arguing about whose team is the best team. And then you ask them,
our team.
And then they even say our. There's a possessive element to it. And then they go like,
bought.
Okay, so Do you own a stake in this club? No, I don't. I'm just a fan. What do you mean? No, I'm broke, bro. What do you mean? Can I own a stake in that club? I'm like, oh, okay.
I totally got the picture when I was, you know, humbled by one of my friends when it's, you know, when they, you know, okay, they stomped in my room. I was in the middle of my game. So they basically saw what I was doing there. So then they, you know, I was showing them my guns collection. And they were like, so you are here making a fan of us for fictionally owning soccer teams. And you are here, you here own a bunch of stuff. Because in my Need for Speed, you know, thing, in my Need for Speed account, I'm a billionaire. I have a Bugatti Koenigsegg. Look, the whole thing is imaginary.
I'm an imaginary general in XCOM 2, you know, that gives me gray hair every day. No.
Look, our imagination, you know, works magic.
At one stage, I impersonated Napoleon Bonaparte to act like Napoleon.
Men never grow up. Now, we never do. You know, you'll be wasting your time.
Yeah, I've got my younger brother who always thinks he's a tank. He's a tank. He's a tank commander, you know, and then he plays War Thunder. And some guys believe they are Jose Mourinho by playing Football Manager.
Yep. We bought this player for $2.5 billion.
And then the people ask, "Oh, did you have that much money?" No, bruh. It's in this game.
No, man. See, yeah. Look. It's very exhilarating. I'll admit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It allows us to be in that position.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Without the real life engagements.
Well, one lady made a meme of that men will be standing in front of a fridge asking you, "Well, where's the tomato sauce? Where's the tomatoes? The tomato sauce is right there in front of them."
Are you saying that proves the point? Why?
Yeah, and then you watch them play video games. He will be talking to his homies. There's a sniper up the mountains just behind that tree.
And then everyone's like, "How did you see that?"
Well, you can see a sniper behind the tree. You can't see tomato sauce in front of you. It's a guy thing. You won't understand, but.
You must have 360 degrees peripheral awareness.
I think it's about adrenaline, though. I think
it's escapism.
What?
Escapism. The reason, the proven reason that has been researched as to why men love playing video games. Video games is like reading a novel. In some cases, in some parts of the world, men find a way to escape. So you have your real life. Indications,
and you have the one that's more
that gives you your peace of mind every night or every day or whatever you do. It's escapism. Reading, escapism. Watching football, escapism. Going to the theater, escapism. Going to the art gallery for women in many cases. So, I also like going to the art gallery. It's just in Namibia, the art gallery is literally a government office because it is, and it's only open Monday to Friday. 8 to 5.
When people are at work. Whoever came up with that timetable?
It's the same for the museums also, brah. They're supposed to be open the times when I am off from work. Nah, man. Now I get there and... sorry, brah. We're closed on Saturday. Public holiday on Sustu.
Huh?
On Sustu.
That's like a restaurant telling you that we're closed for lunch. It's a restaurant. What do you mean we're closed for lunch?
Exactly! So now, here's the thing there. I've got a whole bunch of nieces and nephews. And a whole bunch that were born in between as well.
Yeah.
So, you would like to take them to a cultural activity as well. For example, I was taken to museums by my sister, my elder sister.
Yeah.
Now, you have to contend with work on our schedule or nothing. Case off here of Jesni. Te vali je los. Is what we used to say, tell each other as a teenage boy. Teenage. So, now you've got to work with that particular kind of culture in Namibia. A culture that literally negates the other aspect of trying to explore culture in Namibia. You want to see art pieces. You want to look at sculptures. You want to go look at the museums. But when you get there, they have to plan. And this is literally the thinking, Helmut, that I don't like about us Namibians. That 8 to 5 mentality.
No. My point is based on us Africans. And I think I've made this point before, especially in a reference to cultural preservation, especially, you know, with the use of museums.
Yeah.
guys, I really love the independence we have. And thank you for fighting for that independence. But thanks is not cultural.
No, it actually is.
Not ours.
Well, we didn't. Yeah. It is.
Have historical museums.
Are you talking about that Casper in the museum?
Yeah, I also wonder that. Isn't that like on the second or third floor?
How did they get that Casper in there?
I have no idea. But I mean, that was genius. Cultural preservation, especially with the use of museums, is having cultural artifacts. This art is from this period in this tribe's history. This is what it signifies and all that and on.
Which, yeah. You are actually on the right path. Do you know why, Helmut?
Yeah.
Instead of having one national identity,
yeah,
break up the identity of Namibia.
Collect this information.
Thanks.
Document it. Learn one thing from the British Museum, albeit most of it is stolen. Look.
Coming from Egypt.
Look.
And Nigeria.
Look, I think if you can look from the British Museum, after reading through the history of the British Museum, I don't think I'm going to go on a heist with an English guy. Those guys are very terrible at stealing, because not only did they steal this artifact, they decided to take it to England, put it in a glass house, and label where it was stolen, who stole it, and which time. And they'll be like,
no, because they have to now tell everybody. They have to now tell. That is the brutality of history, Hamoud. In terms of now preserving culture and all that.
Yeah.
You have to say, now, how is this thing still in this pristine condition as it is 150 years ago?
Yeah.
And then the curator, yeah, which is a historian, has to tell you, you know what? My ancestors took it from here and they took it back to Germany. And they preserved it over there in these particular methods and solutions and stuff. And it has survived.
This pottery, this pottery or this bronze piece of art is from this period.
Yeah.
It was collected. No, stolen. Which collected? But a commercial break.
With either a non-alcoholic Heineken, Savannah, Vintook Original or Vintook Lemon. Let's cheers to connecting. To moments shared and good vibes. Anytime. Anywhere. Grab one of our great tasting non-alcoholic beers or ciders. Easy to connect. Easy to enjoy. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event.
Welcome back. To continue, basically, to wrap up. On the 10th World Summit on Arts and Culture that took place in Seoul, North Korea. There are key takeaways that you find on page 14. And the first one is culture is an essential dimension of a livable society.
Mm.
And you have number two, that is culture is not monolithic. That's the diversity that we talk about. Take, for example, you can just say, the monolithic part is a very important part, because in the very same way that you have a lot of non-Africans that think there's such a thing as African culture, Africa is diverse and there are a lot of different people with a lot of different, different cultural practices. Yeah. You see the same thing here in Namibia. There's someone who's going to tell you that, that's Kavango culture. For one, there is no such thing as Kavango culture. Is it a Mbukushu culture? Is it a Girigu culture?
Exactly.
Is it a Kwangari culture?
Yeah.
So all these things, we like to put each other in a monolith. And I like to point to that, because I make that mistake like all the time. Imagine growing up, going to school and then hearing about, Shuambo culture, Shuambo culture. Then you find out that there are different, there are a bunch of different dialects that in this Oshuambo umbrella. And they all have different ways that they, different cultural practices.
Mm.
So. Why more often most of these confusions is because a lot of us think there's Kavango is a tribe. Actually, Kavango is a region.
But Hamoud, that is literally, I'm so glad you explained that thing. That is the broader, and it is literally born from misinformation. And in
some our own misinformation.
And also disinformation. People and various particular people that have everyday conversations, instead of asking properly, you know, what is your culture based upon? What are these particular things and elements? They already make sort of like, they have a preconceived idea. They have an idea before they even met you of what your identity is.
So that's feeds into stereotypes.
Yeah. Which is the negative, obviously, of the global cultural discussion, which is another particular thing also in terms of how you need to do your work every day.
Yeah.
If I tell you, Helmut, that in, what is the thing's name? In Japan. Now, I'm always intrigued and I always feel sorry for the Japanese specifically. Not, well, there's 127 million of them versus us measly 3 million Namibians. But why I say I feel sorry for them. In Japan, they have a lot of unwritten rules which governs their society. So,
which are mostly adhered to than even the written ones.
Yeah,
than some of the written ones.
And because they've got a language way different from English. Here in Africa, we are told be transparent. Because this idea of transparency comes from Europe.
Yeah.
And from North America. And from the religious entities that obviously, you know, came through from these two zones. If you go to Asia, they have a cultural activity known as obfuscation.
What's that?
Obfuscation is, I am not telling you the fact of the story. I'm sort of like leading you to the water, indicating you that there's water in the watering hole.
Then you can find the water yourself.
Find the water yourself if you're thirsty. If you're not thirsty, there's an instrument that can aid you in becoming thirsty known as the salt rock. And there's the bucket. If you want to scoop the water and not contaminate, do that. That is what the Asians have. From Japan, from to South Korea, to North Korea, to Japan. It's a cultural activity where you don't speak directly, but you speak directly.
Okay, now I'm confused.
Exactly. Do you know how many books I had to read about that?
Uh-huh.
About obfuscation. Obfuscation is don't be completely honest. Don't be completely direct. But you have to lead the cow to the watering hole to explain if you're sitting in front of me.
No wonder most of the puzzle games are coming out of Asia.
Well, they conceived it's the best in terms of strategy, to help you with strategy, like Mahjong.
Yeah.
But the downside literally is, Helmut, when it comes to a cultural scenario, this is another negative which actually explains the why I feel sorry for them. Is they've got something known as, there is, after the Second World War, now Japan had to most rebuild back.
Yeah.
There is a policy document somewhere, but you will never find an English version of it. A lot of American historians will tell you about there was a change in culture in rebuilding Japan from occupation after the Second World War. There was a change in culture, and it was based upon rebuilding Japan to a new glorious industrial vision. They established it like this, Helmut. First country, then company, then family, then you.
So it's a communal based, not.
But it's worse than communal. I'm describing it as a Namibian.
Uh-huh.
It looks bad for me. So Japan has established labor laws and ways about how you work as an employee.
Yeah.
But in Japan, they will actually pay you more if you sit there waiting for your supervisor up until 9 p.m. at night for your supervisor to finish his work.
Just sit.
Just sit and wait. Even if you finished your work in the first hour of the day.
Can I play video games?
Even then, they don't like that. But if you stay behind,
In other words, look busy.
Spangius, you know, team spirit, you know. Spangius, you are there together, you know, together in the trenches.
Yeah.
Even though it's just one guy doing the work. They will pay you better based on that. They will treat you better in their corporate cultures.
So it's a show of some type of respect. or something.
And that too, even though you have in the labor law, they must indicate that your working hours have to start from, Japan is from 9 a.m. Yeah, they start an hour later. Them, America, and some part, and most of Europe. So they have 9 to 5.
Not 8 to 5.
Not 8 to 5 like us. Somehow I believe us Africans were shortchanged somewhere. Someone shortchanged us. But anyway, so,
yeah.
So in the Japanese work culture discussion, it says literally, your job is 9 to 5 now.
Yeah.
But the Japanese want you to be there an hour before you start.
Yeah, no, Japanese bosses working in Africa are going, hey!
When is this labor force showing up, you saw?
labor force is taking a shower. 15 minutes is starting time.
But people are switching only switching on the PC at 8 a.m. on the dot.
I love our continent.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that brings us to the end of our show for today. And, we're supposed to have a competition today, but, we have it tomorrow. We're going to bring it to you tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So fasten a seatbelt.
We'll be back.
Yeah. Until tomorrow, same time, same place. And tomorrow will be, please, let's familiarize ourselves with Google, guys, because this is becoming a little embarrassing.
What happened again, Herman?
Mm.
Is it mind your gap contributions?
The issue, guys, not made out of pasta, dude. I'm just saying.
Oh!
Until tomorrow, same time.
Why are you roasting people whole week later?
Look, I'm just saying, ladies, when it comes to this, food-related questions, You guys are top of your game.
But you're making us jealous, man.
You're making, actually.
And you're embarrassing us because it's making us look bad.
Big time. And not us in the studio, as in.
As the gender.
Yeah.
And I even feel embarrassed. Hey, winner.
Mahangu from Maize. Let's be serious with life. Until tomorrow.
Same time, same place, guys. Enjoy the rest of your programming in our company.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.